Hi, and welcome to Edulatte. My name's Beck Keogh. Tonight, we'll be talking with Kylie Barrett. Kylie is an educator and an award-winning designer. Her journey has been less than conventional and typifies this series. I can't wait to share her journey with you. Hi, Kylie, and welcome to the podcast. Now, first questions first. How do I actually pronounce your surname? Because names are an incredibly important commodity.
I'm not actually sure of the origins of the name. So normally I just say Barrett.
Barrett. It sounds very official when you say it that way, though. It sounds really nice little French kind of fling to it.
You know, the buckets and the berets. What is that old show where, you know, Mrs. Bucket, but they pronounced it bouquet?
That's
me.
I love it.
I got told when I was little it's had some sort of French ancestry, and I sort of ran with that for a while until I was old enough to realize that, you know, they are having me on.
as they do. Kylie, could you share with us how you became an educator? Was it your typical journey, or is there a little bit more to you than meets the eye?
No, I did not always want to be an educator. I didn't even think about it. It was when I was older and I actually received some sort of like mentoring. So I guess the very first thing was when I left school, I was really into psychology. So I did a double degree in science and psychology. So I was doing mathematics and biology and chemistry and all that sort of stuff at university, and a psychology stream as well. And I'd always had an interest in like communications and all that sort of thing, and was quite uncomfortable in my maths and science tutorials at university. I was only 17, and I was, you know, mostly boys, and I didn't have the coping skills for that. And I got offered a position in Sydney with a technical college to do film and television, and it was attached to the ABC. And so I packed my bags and went to work in television for many years. So yeah, teaching was not a consideration until the Olympics. So it's the Sydney 2000 Olympics. I was working for the managing director of Westpac on that project, and I was part of the executive development team. It was a special team made up of psychologists and teachers, and they did a lot of like psychometric testing and different things. They were basically rolling out a cultural change at the bank during the Olympics. It was an amazing time to be working for them. They said, you know, we really think you should think about going back and finishing a degree, and it really should be in education. And so I was like, oh, okay. Well, you know, television isn't really... It was just not, didn't have my heart, I didn't feel like I was, I was giving back. It was just so different. It was a totally different environment. So yeah, so that basically is how I ended up going back to do an education degree.
Yep. Hmm.
And it was really like, I mean, I sat tests and everything to be part of the high potential team. And that was the first time ever that it dawned on me that I had the potential to do something else.
Wow.
Or I had lost my confidence completely, at university. It was just, yeah, those first few years were just crushing. I don't think I had a connection, and I was very male dominated. And there was no one from, I think there was one person from my school that I knew at the entire university. I just wasn't ready.
Yeah. I know you mentioned that during your early years in university that things weren't ideal. You were in a male dominated course, but would you agree that some of those experiences have made you the strong, independent woman that you are today?
Yeah, definitely. I have been looked over and turned down so many times in my life because I'm a girl, and I came from a really traditional my family, my mum's side of the family were all Mormons, so it was very traditional, rural Australia. I always felt that struggle. The boys would all run off when I arrived and go surfing or skateboarding or something. I wasn't involved, so I just had to stay in the kitchen while everybody out went out this really cool life, and it was all because I was just a girl. And it was just, I like I said, I look back now and I'm traumatized by it, and I try and be different with my children and with women and girls I work with.
There's no doubt that you're an inspiring educator, Kylie. You're the kind of person that I feel that every girl in every classroom across Australia should be able to hear their journey and understand that girls can.
Yeah, and I think there's not always a direct pathway. I think mentorship is just so incredibly important. Other people seeing something in you that you can't see, or that you've been conditioned through unconditional bias to just believe doesn't exist within you. So when somebody else, and the champion in that particular situation was a male. And he really championed me and said, I can see a different path for you. He saw something in me that I did not.
I know your time in the classroom was heavily Reggio based, and that's something that a lot of listeners will be keen to hear more about. Can you talk to us about that pedagogy and that part of your journey?
So I think what was really interesting, my time in the classroom was definitely informed from my experience working in film and television and working with really creative, inspired, fun people. I had completed a double degree by that stage in health science and education. So like a human movement, like PE. A double degree in that in education. And what I found was, out of all the years I taught, it was the early years that same energy really resonated strongly. You didn't have to pull it out of the children. It was just there. And it was so remarkable. And I was just hooked. It was like seriously, there's no difference between working with a bunch of early years children in a Reggio setting compared to be working with creatives in a film and television, or an innovation context. There is such intrinsic drive and curiosity and interest and willingness to share and connect with others. And so that was how I actually knew that I really wanted to spend more time in the early years. And I took a job in South Australia at a Reggio purpose-built school. I loved the concept, the documentation, everything. I absolutely loved working with the students. It was really the students that kept me going. I was not from Adelaide originally, so it was definitely, I was totally inspired. It was just the best.
There's nothing quite like a hands-on learning experience and getting down into the sandpit, is there?
Yeah. A children's work is playing. Yeah. And I think that we need more play as adults. I think that, they learn through playing, and that is their work. And I just think that it's such an important part of the process in terms of the early years of education.
Do you feel that we've got a lot to learn in education from modern work practices?
Oh, absolutely. I think that education is so overcomplicated, unnecessarily. And I really do think that
having that flexibility and materials and different ways that the students can have voice and utilizing observation and formative assessments are just really, really important. I think education is way over complicated in terms of the layers and the administration and everything else that goes into it, when really if we break all elements down to the very core pieces of development and human potential that we want to build in our students, it really simplifies. What am I doing here? You know, like what do I want to see at the end? I think that all those layers complicate that and can cause confusion and stress and anxiety for teachers, because poor teachers just want to get it right. You know, they want to do a good job. And I think that unfortunately for a lot of teachers, that intuitive process is ripped out of them. They don't even get a chance to explore it often and just, you know, follow this process or that process, and is this way over that way. And I just don't buy into any of that.
Do you feel that there's something that kind of has instigated this, or is there something at the crux of this?
I just think that, so many teachers have classes now that have such a range of learning ability, and we don't talk about it. Right. And people go, oh, we will differentiate. Oh, my goodness. I think that is possible to differentiate very well. But it has to be student centered if you're going to do that well. And I think that it's almost like some people get the layering so disconnected that it's not really in service of the child. It's in service of the system. And so that is where I sort of, have an issue.
That kind of leads nicely into my next discussion point around how all of your experiences have kind of now all come together. Your knowledge of math and science, but your passion for play-based learning have all kind of melded into this amazing new business venture. Can you talk to us a bit about that?
Yeah, well, it's all very accidental in so many ways, you know. And I really have to say that I'm clearer on what I want to do now than ever before. You know, finding my voice, you know, who am I if I'm not in a classroom? I don't even feel safe, you know, like I'm like in this other world, and it's sort of part creative, part educator, you know, part entrepreneur. And it's definitely a melting pot of all my experiences. And that's why I think as someone, it has helped me develop my confidence to be able to talk to you and to talk to other people, because for so long I would be afraid to put my hand up, or if I was overlooked the first time, I wouldn't put it up again, you know? The other thing that I find really interesting is that my husband has the fastest processing speed ever, right? Like, he processes information so incredibly fast. I don't. But that doesn't mean like that I'm not bright. It just means that I just need a little bit of more time to digest, you know, that information. And so allowing myself that grace and to develop confidence and learn how to speak and be okay. Like, I may not have the fastest processing speed in the room, but I'm not dumb and I've got really good ideas. And so I think it comes to a point, is it's the first time ever in my life where I've backed myself, that there is no backup, that there is, if I don't make it work, then there's nothing. There's nothing for dinner. There's no house. There's just nothing. That is really scary.
So how do you feel about education now? Why the shift? Why the move into this this personal venture?
I think that we all have a different way that we can give service. And for now, building this company is mine. And I take so much from industry. My practice in industry, in film and television and media, I've been able to work with some of the most creative minds on the planet, and I'm super proud of that. And I'm super proud to bring that experience and knowledge of innovation and creativity into the classroom for teachers so they can see why. Why do we teach shapes? Why do we teach objects? Well, this is why, because, you know, these incredible people, this is their bread and butter. And this is, you know, this is what it looks like in industry. So that is what's really cool for me.
So I guess the core message here really is don't be afraid to try something new on.
Oh, I 100% agree. And that's why the education degree originally was offered to me. You know, one is that I was a good communicator. So, you know, I had that ability. I had that ability to go out and communicate complex concepts simply. And that was one of the reasons why I was told, you know, I should look at education. The other thing is that I was told it was the degree with the most transferable skill set. And that the majority of people in the team at the bank were ex-teachers. And that to me was fascinating. I'm like, wow. And they're like, yeah, they are amazing employees. It's just exceptional how transferable the skill set is. And you will never be without a job.
Wow. Well, there you go. That's something I've never heard.
Yeah, I don't think teachers think that about themselves. I don't think they realize how that skill set's perceived and how valuable it is. And now even too, I think the rise with a lot of teachers, you know, putting resources up for sale and making websites and being creative like you with this incredible concept of EduLatte. Like, I absolutely love that. I love coffee, you know. I love chatting with like-minded people. I think that it's really important to spread your wings and not feel that you're siloed in one particular area. Sometimes it's yes, you feel safe, but safety doesn't always foster creativity.
I think you and I are on the same page there with the importance of creativity. But I think the other thing that you and I are on the same page with is the importance of feedback and how feedback can actually shape and inform creative thought processes.
Yeah, it's quite remarkable, actually. And I was commenting on a post actually today, just someone was saying about, you know, documentation and, you know, using the technology and the tools and getting that feedback. And whilst the technology is a great way to enhance that, the technology is not assessing them. You know, you are. And there is such power in authentic, timely feedback. And so if you're using technology down the track to review something and it like so many of us, it's at night or on the weekend, you know, or holidays when we pile up, you know, all our marking and everything, and that we're trying to mark something and we give feedback, but that is nowhere near as powerful as the opportunity in the moment to make that connection. So, yeah, so I do definitely think that there's a balance there that we have to strike, and that all comes back to teaching practice and process and habits that we can construct to make those connections and give timely observational feedback.
I think it's really important also that we intentionally teach children how to use feedback at an age-appropriate level and in their own scaffolded manner, because the results when you permit children to understand the fact that feedback's actually to be thought about, to be considered, and then to be put into action, that's quite profound for a lot of our learners.
So often we hear about feedback on the end product, but what's important for me is feedback during the process. So that's what I'm talking about, timely sort of, you know, an authentic observational feedback, because often when we we're just doing a sentence, we give feedback on that sentence, right? That's really powerful. But a lot of the times when we're in, you know, a making sort of space or someone's doing like a design challenge or something like that, the feedback comes towards, oh, look, I've got this product now and everyone's going to do a gallery walk and give feedback. But that's the product, the process, you know, it's a process, and every distinct stage through that process has explicit skill set that need to be given feedback differently. And you don't even have to do the whole process. You can break it up and do chunks of it, you know, chunking. And so there's lots of ways that we can look at really enhancing that feedback from a young age. And I tell you what, I learned more about feedback as a Reggio teacher in early years than I ever learned as a primary or secondary teacher. It was incredibly powerful and it totally informs my way that I think about it.
Those little people certainly are intuitive and they know what they want. They do not mind pushing back. They also ask some really hard questions and enter into some really powerful dialogue.
Yeah, real dialogue, real conversation. Yeah, real, you know, that curiosity and that power that inquiry has is really, you know, profound, but it's not like someone invented it. It's the way we're just like organically wired, you know. It's like, oh, that's a pedagogical approach. But, you know, like, yes, but because, you know, when you drill down, it's all about human potential. And, you know, like, I mean, everything's so commercialized in education, you know. I totally understand that. And I'm someone that is in the process of having an education business. So, but I do have cynicism at some points. Because I'm a huge fan of inquiry, but, you know, yeah, people want to claim it as their own. You can't.
And you're right, you know, if you think back to early days of having small children who have not been to school at all, their favourite question is why? Mm-hmm. Why is the sky blue? Why are we doing this? Why is that person wearing that? Everything is why. And that why is what we all need to keep doing. We need to come back to that why, because that's when good discoveries happen. That's when magic occurs.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, like it's so great to get back into that magic every now and again. It's so hard. It is just like, you know, there should be a warning on this discussion. You know, please note that we know that teaching is hard work, you know, like we don't have the answers. You know, you try and lift people's spirits and it's really through the connection of colleagues and students that happens. It's those aha moments. It feels when you've really been in service of a colleague or a child that it's all worthwhile. But yeah, there are some days that are like mud, you know, some days that just, you are just so, the failure or the, or the sheer just, you know, I think trauma of what some students have to go through and, you know, you have to stand by and watch. Yeah, are really significant. And I think that, you know, if we can bring joy and lightness and encourage teachers to experiment and don't take it so seriously and, you know, all that sort of thing, I think that's a really important, particularly now. When, you know, like in the next couple of weeks, people could still be making double lessons, you know, virtual and in person and everything else that goes with that.
Teachers are amazing creatures. They take on, they take the weight of the world on their shoulders and yet they get up every day with a coffee in their hand, a smile on their face and they rock on up and they provide safe spaces, whether it's virtually or whether it's in, you know, face-to-face for those little people. They're amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I saw something, I got a lot in education when I was in education, you knew too much, you know, like you're too much. And I saw a great a post the other day by Sarah Blakely. I follow her. She's actually also an inventor. She's an American inventor. She invented Spanx. I don't know if you've heard them, but anyway, she has a mug and it says, "If I'm too much for you, have you considered that you're not enough?" You know what? I wish I had that in my teaching career because the amount of put downs I had, you know, it's through the career, it's quite fascinating. It's like, well, you don't do that. That's a, you know, and don't do that. And it's like, why am I too much? Is it because you're not enough? You know, is it because you're at a place where, you know, that makes you feel unsafe? But instead, as most of us do, we, the creative ones too, often in just internalize it and go, oh, okay. You just give up because no one wants to try anything new.
Yeah.
I don't have that problem now because I try something new every day.
Oh, it's exciting. We're all very jealous of that, I can tell you right now.
Oh my gosh, I don't know that it's any less work though, so just keep that in mind. I think I ran the business and worked pretty much full time and with the kids straight out of my master's degree with small children, and I think I would have juggled both for maybe 18 months. But it's interesting because, you know, people say, well, how do you choose? You know, do you run away from it? And I often like it to breaking up. I think I've said this to you before with a, you know, like with a lover or something, because it's really profound. Just because I didn't, I left and created a business didn't mean I didn't love the classroom. But it's choosing, you know, what I want for my family and myself and the lifestyle choices. So I think that there's so much more that goes into it than you burnt out or you don't want to teach. That's a myth.
Yeah.
And people leave for all different reasons.
Yeah. I think that I was about to say exactly the same thing. I don't think you can ever say all teachers burn out and all teachers leave because they're exhausted or had enough. I think there's a plethora of reasons, as with any occupation or any job. You know, you move on or you change directions because it's right for you at that point in time. It's a changing of direction. It's the turning of a page. But it certainly doesn't mean that you don't love what you did or you haven't learned from it.
Absolutely. And I'm still learning. I am just someone that like just wakes up just wanting to learn, and I have to put the brakes on it sometimes. So I'm like, oh, I'll do this and this and this. And I, you know, like, intentional focus, Kylie. Let's just put some boundaries on that. So so that's been interesting too.
So where to next? What's the next big adventure for you?
Oh my goodness. Well, there's lots of changes because of COSPA. So that was one big project that we had hoped to have on for the New South Wales Department of Education and the Australian Space Agency. And many other, you know, educational sort of, not startups, but organisations were involved in that in Sydney, but it's had to be postponed. So I'm just waiting to find out if that's the case, but that has been an incredible experience. And the next thing is that probably a round of PD. I stopped doing PD face-to-face, obviously, because of COVID, and then I created for the department an online course and a competition called the Cool Controller project, which was really exciting. But a lot of those are very step-by-step orientated, and what I'm finding is it's really interesting breaking that system down even more and providing more mentoring support to teachers that are interested in developing their understanding of engineering design and what that looks like in STEM for science and technology. There's a lot of confusion out there, I think, sometimes, you know, around, you know, STEM and how it's taught and all that sort of stuff. So it's really helping support now teachers in our journey. What is engineering design? And when am I doing it? How do I do it? And, you know, how do I make sure that it's impactful? Because I think a lot of teachers are doing engineering design and they don't even realize they're doing it.
So for those of you out there listening, you may or may not know that Kylie has a fabulous product called the 3D Splat. Kylie, what's currently happening with that particular product?
Yeah, so I think it's just working with my community. We're really fortunate to be in 14 different countries. We just had a school adopt us in South Africa a couple of weeks ago. And yeah, it's just really moving ahead and supporting our students and teachers more of that. I think that, to me, that's what it's all about.
Yeah. I know you and I have spoken about this concept of micro-learning and the fact that we are time poor as educators, and that when we learn something, we want to get to the crux of it. We want to know the what and the where and the how. We want something to grab and run and go with.
Right. My time's valuable, you know, like my time is super valuable, and I am time poor. You know, I want to know the hack of how to actually tick 20 things off my list at once to serve the system. I don't want to learn how to, you know, like extrude one thing so it's more complicated than it was at the start. And that's the secret of good design. The secret of good design is making the complex extremely simple and interactive, almost on an intuitive level, and to really drill down and understand what those core components are. And that is the way that I design. That is the way a lot of designers design. Yeah. So I think we, you know, using that in teaching can really enhance us servicing the students.
I think you and I have had a few discussions around this, the value of kinesthetic or hands-on experiences where we're making, doing, and it's a process. It's not just chalk and talk. It's your hands are in the learning. You are creating, you are innovating, you are constantly thinking and critiquing.
Ah. I'm all hands on. And, you know, that's one of the big things that I talk about is the actual value of hands on, of actually doing the process. It's neurologically the way that our brain works and constructs and learns and wires up pathways. You know, like sometimes I feel like it's all in service to the head and we've forgotten about the rest of the body. and certainly from, you know, my background doing, you know, human movement science, I'm profoundly interested in the doing and the acquisition of skills. So when you look at the acquisition of skills and the three different levels, that still applies across any domain when we're acquiring skills. And today it's more important than ever that we actually have our students learning those skills, and as teachers we're learning those skills so that they're transferable, not content, that their skill set is transferable, and that the students have a toolkit, and so do teachers, to transfer that knowledge that they have and transform it into creative expression. And that might be creative expression with numbers.
And I think it's that privilege of witnessing that creative thinking and that creative form that puts us in a really privileged position.
Yeah, absolutely. It's phenomenal. And it's great to, I think one of the privileges of being a teacher is seeing students on their journey. You know, just 1 year with them is almost not enough. It takes 6 months to sort of feel like you get to know them. and then just when you know they're getting all your jokes and they understand all your quirks and everything, you've got to say goodbye. And it's like, oh man, you know, I do understand why some schools have cycles where the teacher stays with the child longer, because it is a real privilege to watch that development in you know, in a human. They call them children, they're humans, and we're helping them develop their potential so they can have a great life.
What do you think the benefits are of using design thinking or the design process within the classroom context are?
Phenomenal. If we're able to, what we actually see is different strengths come out of the children. Some children rock up every day and they are judged on their weaknesses only. You know, they may have poor auditory processing, or they may have a slower processing speed, or they might have one of a million neurological differences that has nothing to do with how smart they are, but how much they struggle in the system and, you know, are missing things. Now, when you apply a student-centered approach, like an inquiry, or you give voice and choice and you allow the student to make connection with passion, you simplify things, and all of a sudden, oh my goodness, we're seeing, you know, an improvement in outcomes. It's a really powerful medium. And when you see it, and see how students can change just through applying a different pedagogical approach, and giving them choice, then it is quite remarkable the changes that we can see in our students.
And the level of engagement go up. They want to come and they want to learn. They want to participate. They want to own some part of that classroom or that learning community.
Oh, absolutely. I have had a child that has had extreme school refusal since kindergarten. Extreme, harrowing, right? To the point we've negotiated time at school. We've done all sorts of things. And what is fascinating, and I've spent a lot of time at that school. It's one of the reasons why I ended up leaving in the classroom. I've spent a lot more time as a mum. And what I find fascinating is as soon as they gave my child permission to learn through having responsibility of the chickens at the school, her attendance skyrocketed. Her interest, her engagement, her sense of connection, her purpose for being there wasn't anymore to serve the system. It was to serve and take care of those chickens. They needed her.
Community as well. She was part of the community. She was contributing to the wider school community.
Yeah. And you know what? It's just, it's wonderful. It's just been such a great change. I just really think it's empowering students to find a connection and knowing them well enough. And you know, that's our first standard. Why? Just like know your students, right? That's the first standard.
Yep. And that's where it all stems from. And it rightly should be the first standard, because if you don't know your students, the rest of it just doesn't matter.
I think so. I think that's you know, it's so important and amazing to teachers to get to know these human beings and how they see the world and, you know, all those divergent thoughts and busy minds. It's phenomenal.
I wonder if you might talk to us a little bit about your Splat 3D design product and educational platforms. I think that this is a really good takeaway for all of our educators out there. Jump on the website, have a look, maybe order a class set. They're really reasonably priced, actually. Kylie, how can we connect with you? How can we learn more about you and your fantastic design?
So at Splat3D is our social media handle across Instagram and Twitter. We have a YouTube channel and it is literally called Splat3D. So the website is Splat3D. It's all the same. And Splat is short for Splatten, which means to split up, the center in Old English, which is also the onomatopoeia of, you know, the sound, and also what makes the defining aspect of the tool. When you see it, it has a split up the center of the tool. And that's what creates the isometric axis. So, you can find us. If you've got any questions about enhancing engineering design as part of your STEM program, or you're curious about, working with the Splat tools in your mathematics program, you know, we'd love to hear from anyone.
Thanks, Kylie. Make sure that you do jump on and check that out and take Kylie up on that offer. If you're looking for a resource for your math program, or you're thinking about doing some designing within an inquiry project, Kylie is the person to talk to. She is the expert in this field for sure. Kylie, we want to thank you for joining us on Edulate. We have thoroughly enjoyed hearing your journey, and we hope that all the listeners out there have also enjoyed the journey as well. My name's Beck Keogh, and you've been listening to